fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
Thank you, Daniel, and thank you for joining me today on this fabulous Friday. So good to have you here on The Cale Clark Show. Hey, guess what? The phones are working today. I know a lot of you guys were trying to call in yesterday on the show. We were wondering, wow, like we haven't gotten a single call. Well, that was for a good reason. A freak storm swept through Green Bay, knocked out the phone lines, knocked out the feed of this show on the Relevant Radio app and also online. The radio still worked. Good old terrestrial radio. It's still kicking around. And so anyways, the phones are fixed. All is well. It wasn't our fault. We're not taking any responsibility for it. But you can call in right now, 1-888-914-9149. Toll free line to call if you want to react to anything that you heard on the show yesterday, which I thought was a pretty fascinating discussion, actually. You can call in 888-914-9149. We talked about Dune. We talked about all kinds of different things yesterday. And you can also tweet at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. The email address, if you want to email any questions for us about the faith, things that you want to have answered, comments about the show, questions, email Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Well, lots to talk about today. As you probably heard, Mark Zuckerberg, yeah, who's kind of like a modern-day Lex Luthor in some ways. He's trying to rise above that. He's trying to be a kinder, gentler Zuckerberg. He has changed the name of Facebook to the Metaverse. Well, it's just called Meta, the company, but he is creating something where he wants to, he hasn't created it, but he wants to be the master of the Metaverse. And what I'm going to wonder is Zuckerberg trying to set up a rival Meta Church, which will be a rival to the Roman Catholic Church? Now, that sounds like some sort of sensationalistic headline out of the National Enquirer, but which it kind of is, but at the same time, I really do think there might be something to this. I'm going to be talking about this later in the show. Perhaps you heard some news about this. I'm going to try to break it all down for you. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about hauntings. Ooh, we need some spooky sound effects, Lucas, because, of course, Halloween is coming up this Sunday, and it is a Catholic feast. Don't forget, it's All Hallows Eve. Oh, wow. Is that Stranger Things?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I figured you'd do that. Hey, not bad. Not a bad choice. Are you going to be dressing up as a Stranger Things character for Halloween, Lucas?
I'm perpetually a Stranger Things character.
Yeah, that's kind of your... No comment. No. Hey, well, you know what? You could be on the show. You should be on the show. But anyways, let's talk about hauntings. Are they real? Michelle McDaniel, who writes for The Pillar, great Catholic journalism at The Pillar, and she also works for Word on Fire, does some of their social media stuff. She interviewed Dr. Regis Martin, who's a professor of theology at the Franciscan University of Steubenville, to ask him this question. It just came out today on The Pillar. And she was kind enough to share some audio with us of that interview. We're going to be sharing some audio of... Now, whenever I say Dr. Regis Martin, I want to say Regis Philbin, which is obviously not the same guy. Regis Philbin, he was Catholic too. The late Regis Philbin, of course, from Regis and Kathy Lee. And what a character he was, big supporter of Notre Dame. Anyways, different guy, Regis, I almost did it again, Regis Martin, Dr. Regis Martin. Now, he is really good. I met him once at a conference at the Franciscan University of Steubenville before I came back into the church, actually. That was one of the key events in my life. And really, he's written a really great book called The Last Things, Death, Judgment, Heaven, Hell. It's a really, really good book. I highly recommend it. It's a good book on the last things. So Michelle McDaniel interviewed, of course, with Halloween being around the corner, Dr. Regis Martin, to ask him about the concept of hauntings. What does the church really teach about haunted stuff? Haunted houses, haunted buildings. Is it for real? Is it for real? And as she writes, is that weird noise in your house right now possibly a ghost? Well, hopefully not. Hopefully it's just my voice and I'm not a ghost. But here's what she said. So the first question that Michelle McDaniel asked Dr. Regis Martin was, can Christians celebrate Halloween, or has it become too connected with the occult? And a lot of non-Catholic Christians, a lot of evangelical Christians would say, absolutely not. You are not allowed to celebrate Halloween. Some of them do. Some of them do. There's a bit of a difference of opinion about a lot of things in the Protestant world, but Halloween is one of them. Some Protestant Christians embrace it. Some do not. They think it's playing into the devil's hands. They think it's kind of demonic. What should Catholics think about this? Well, Dr. Regis Martin says that it can be sanctified, not just Christianized, but sanctified. Wow, that's a powerful statement. And here's what he says, quote, those masks that you wear are really a way, I think, of ridiculing the devil. Unmasking the devil. That's a great way to put it. The masks that you wear on Halloween unmask the devil. You make fun of him. He can't bear derision. He does not like it when somebody makes fun of him. And Halloween is one of those wonderful moments when we poke fun at the old guy, Dr. Martin says. When we look at him and say, you are really quite laughable because you have no power except for the power we give you. And the fact that it's situated the very evening before All Saints Day, I think, ushers in that great festival of the redeemed. The saint doesn't need to wear a mask. He's wearing Christ. And that, I think, is enough for him. And yes, St. Paul does say in the New Testament, clothe yourselves with Jesus Christ. That's what we ought to do. So then she kind of gets into, Michelle McDaniel gets into this question of what the church actually teaches about hauntings. Can houses be haunted? And he said yes. He actually said yes. Dr. Martin says, I think they can be. We're not alone. This world is a very rich sort of mosaic that we're looking at. There's a lot more than you can see. When you die, you become more intensely real than you ever were in the flesh. And I don't see why that shouldn't spill over into this world from time to time. I think he's right about that. Obviously, that there's a lot more to this world that we can see. And I always think about that prayer of St. Francis, in dying, we are born to eternal life. Peter Kreeft used to talk about earth being the womb of heaven, in that just as a baby in the womb, a baby in the womb in the world really only knows the reality of his or her mother's womb. This is it. This is the universe, as far as I know. And I'm pretty happy here. I'm kind of swimming around, get fed through this umbilical cord. Life's pretty good. Eventually it gets a little cramped. Things get a little cramped and I want out. And so when a baby is born into the world, wow, there's all this stuff outside the womb that I never knew. There's buildings, there's trucks, there are forests, there are mountains, there are snowfalls, there are lakes, rivers. What a wonderful world, is Louis Armstrong saying about. And so there was a world outside the womb that I never knew existed. Now, the womb was in the world the whole time. The baby just didn't know it. And so Kreeft says that in that way, heaven kind of encompasses earth. Earth is kind of in heaven in the sense that it's the womb, the antechamber of heaven. But all this stuff is surrounding us all the time. We're always surrounded by angels, the Blessed Mother, God. I mean, we just can't see with our physical senses what's happening all around us. And I think that's what Dr. Regis Martin meant when he was alluding to that. So he says, when you die, you become more intensely real than you ever were in the flesh. And I don't see why that shouldn't spill over into this world from time to time. That's a fascinating thought. And I maybe some of you guys have read this book. There was a book that came out a few years ago called Hungry Souls. It was about the souls in purgatory and how they sometimes can manifest themselves in this world to ask for our prayers. They really need them. And obviously we're going to do a novena for all souls, and you can sign up your loved ones at relevantradio.com/souls. No matter how many people you have, put them on the list. Go there, do it tonight. And so sometimes these souls actually have manifested to people, according to this book, and others have talked about this too. People have talked about, you know, palm prints on curtains, you know, the singed palm print of a hand, you know, help me, that kind of thing. And there's souls in purgatory asking for prayers. I need help. No one's praying for me. Can you do that? So now, if you've read that book, if you think that's real, if you've even had an experience with that, you can call in on the Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. And then Michelle McDaniel asked him, Dr. Regis Martin, about what happens after we die. She was basically asking, how is it possible that spirits can still kind of have something to do in this world because of the fact that really our destiny is fixed at the end of our life? We're either going to heaven, hell, but we're, at the end of the day, we're either going to heaven or hell. Purgatory is not a second chance after death. Anybody who's in purgatory is going to heaven. They just haven't been perfectly purified yet. The letter to the Hebrews says that without holiness, no one will see the Lord. And let's face it, before we die, some of us aren't perfectly holy. We're on the journey, we're becoming saints, but maybe we haven't quite arrived yet. Now, there are some people in this world that attain such levels of sanctity that, yes, they could probably skip right over purgatory, as it were, go straight to heaven. The Mother Teresa's, she's in heaven, we know this, St. Mother Teresa, but did she skip over purgatory? That's a great question. I'd like to ask her that, you know. Please God that we are all in heaven reunited one day there. So the fact of the matter is that that is true. That is true that our destiny is fixed at the end of this life. But as Regis Martin says, we can make some provision maybe for spirits that journey about, that can traffic, as he says, in the things of men. He says, quote, I'd like to leave that open because it makes for a more richly imaginative life. Reality is more than what you see. He says it's fraught with mystery, and mystery is not something that is immediately apparent. It's not matter. It has a meaning, and that meaning is beyond a sense or a notion. The angels, he says, think about the angels. They're everywhere. You bump into them all the time, even if you can't see them. And each of us has been assigned an angel, a guardian angel, of course, he's talking about, to look after us. It wouldn't surprise me, he says, if they had left a kind of footprint in the sand to let us know they're here and to ask us, take notice, maybe cultivate a relationship with them. End of quote. And yeah, we should certainly be cultivating a relationship with our guardian angel. Now, a lot of people are in the habit of naming their guardian angel. I don't recommend that. The church actually specifically prohibits that because only God can name an angel. We think about named angels in the Bible, Old and New Testaments. We think about the archangels, Gabriel, Michael. And of course, the word Michael means who is like God. Anything with L in the end of it, you know, L means God in Hebrew. So who is like God? It's a question. It's not a statement. My daughter's name, Michaela, of course, I know that. I know a lot of people named Michael who say that, oh, my name means I am one who is like God. No, you're not. You know, I mean, you are. You're created in the image of God, but let's not get carried away here. You're not a saint yet. So hopefully you're on the way. But it actually is a question in Hebrew, who is like God? And of course, no one is like God. He's absolutely unique. And so a lot of people ask this question, and Dr. Regis Martin had it. We have a little clip here from him on this. The question about, should we worry if we move into a new house? Is it possible that this house has been haunted? There's a Geico commercial where this guy buys a house. Maybe you've seen this one. He goes up into the attic. He never really checked it out. Didn't do a home inspection before he buys the place. Goes up into the attic, and there are all these like weird dolls and scary stuff looking at him. And he's like, I'm out of here. He just runs back downstairs. Should we worry about haunted spaces? Well, here's what he had to say. Let's listen to this clip.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, right. No, I would certainly encourage anyone who moves into a new space, a space that they have no acquaintance with until they sign the deed of ownership, and maybe have it blessed, have holy water sprinkled throughout, because that's a sacramental, and it conveys a grace, an actual grace, that can put these demons, these spirits, to flight. The devil is terrified of holy water. I think it was St. John Vianney who would copiously sprinkle his room, the built-in room, with holy water, because he was oftentimes physically molested by these devils, and that was an effective way to keep them at bay. They're just trauma. traumatized by holy things. So keep them close to us, and they do help banish these evil forces.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right. And I remember being in Rome, seeing all these holy water fonts that had images of little children splashing holy water on demons and little angels, and the demons would be terrified, just running away. They don't get it at all. So use that sacramental. Use holy water a lot. And obviously, if you have any doubts, you should get a priest to come and bless your house. And you should do that anyways when you move into a new place. And they're happy to do it. They're happy to bless cars, homes, and if we can use these things for God's glory that we're entrusted with. So that's an interesting answer to that question by Dr. Regis Martin. And another thing he said, too, is that a lot of people, they spend a lot of time worrying about the demonic, and they fret about it. And really, the focus should be on God. The focus should be on God. But he does say this. He says, quote, "The world no longer belongs to the devils. It belongs to Jesus and to those who love him. So the devils are determined on revenge." I think that's true. He's a defeated foe, Satan. He knows that. His time is short. Jesus definitively won the battle against him on the cross by his powerful resurrection. So they are determined on revenge. They want to take out as many people as they can on their way out. Sin entered the world because of the envy of the devil. That's what it says in the book of Wisdom. I think it's Wisdom 2:24. And Satan just absolutely could not believe that God would want to take these puny humans and share his life with them and actually become one of them. He just couldn't fathom that. And out of envy, he brings about the original sin and tempts our first parents. And of course, the devil is clearly active and still tempting people today. And Regis Martin does also make the point that if you look at the New Testament narratives of the temptation of Jesus, and if you look at, for example, in Matthew chapter 4, when the devil tries to tempt Jesus, one of the temptations is Satan says to him, "I'll give you the kingdoms of this world if you'll bow down and worship me." Now, of course, he's never going to do that. But it does imply, as Martin says, that the kingdom of this world, or at least somehow, he does have control over the kingdoms of this world. Somehow, he's been given that, and he can give them to whoever he chooses. Which is a scary prospect, as Martin says, but it shouldn't really surprise us because, of course, the enemies of Jesus are going to be our enemies too. And so, lastly, the last question that Michelle McDaniel puts to Dr. Regis Martin on this, "Do you have any tips," she asks, "for Catholics who are anxious about this whole topic?" And for a lot of people, it does increase their anxiety levels. Being around Halloween and seeing all this stuff, they're worried about demonic attacks. And he just basically recommended, just stay close to God. God is very, very close to you. You're not alone. You've got your guardian angel. God is with you. He's more present to you than you are to yourself. Got to be aware of that. You've got nothing to fear, except for sin. You got to avoid the occasions of sin. Stay constantly. Keep the presence of God. That is such an important way to avoid sin. I remember once, I've heard this a lot, and you probably did too growing up. If you were ever in a youth group, hey, when you're out on a date with a girl, just remember Jesus is in the car with you, right? So don't, you know, always be aware of that, right? So you can't escape the all-seeing eye of God. And so stay away from sin. And that's also, on the flip side, a very comforting thought that he's always with you. You're not alone. Your soul belongs to God. He created you to be happy forever, that you might be happy in this world and in the next. Eternal beatitude. So he's going to be fighting for you, and he's a lot more powerful than the devil. St. Teresa of Avila, I remember in reading about her, that she had the ability to see the demons supernaturally. She could actually see them. They're hidden from our physical eyes, but she was able to see them, and they look scary. They look pretty monstrous, but she would basically scare them. She would say, "Boo," and they'd got to run away because they were terrified of her, because she had Christ and she was close to Christ. And so, morning offering, offer your day to God. That's one of the things Martin says. Try to keep to daily Mass if possible. frequent reception of communion daily if possible. Prayer, obviously. The rosary. We're going through this whole series called The Biblical Roots of the Rosary on the Faith Explained program, so you can check that out. It might help you to meditate on some of those biblical passages behind the mysteries. And yeah, just understand that God is for us. Who could be against us, as St. Paul says? It's really, really important. So check out that interview from Michelle McDaniel, a really great piece at The Pillar. Are Hauntings Real? Trick or Treat, Are Hauntings Real is the title of it. We'll post a link to it in the show notes. Going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about the metaverse of Mark Zuckerberg. Facebook has rebranded itself to Meta. I'm going to break that down for you. Is he setting up a rival virtual church to the Church of Rome? It's Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Come back. If you want to call in and talk about what we were just talking about, hauntings, are they real? 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And you can also talk about stuff that we had a great show yesterday. You're talking about Simon the Zealot. He might have been one of the Sicarii, guys with these cloak and dagger knives in their pockets. Attacking the enemies of the Jews, the Romans. Jesus made him an apostle. Simon and Jude. Why is Jude the saint of possible cases? We talked about that. That was a great episode. We also talked about Dune, some of the Catholic themes in the movie Dune. So obviously there are phone systems were down yesterday. If you wanted to call in and react to yesterday's show, feel free. And we're also going to talk about some other stuff for the rest of the hour today that you might find fascinating. And another word that starts with F is Facebook. And well, it's not really called Facebook anymore because Mark Zuckerberg has renamed it as Meta. And as many people on Twitter noted, Ron Artest already did that. He changed his name to Meta World Peace. Do you remember that? Anyway, so Kevin Roos, writing today in the New York Times, talked about the metaverse being Mark Zuckerberg's escape hatch. This is a new strategy. And when he announced this, by the way, Zuckerberg, on Thursday, he was smiling. You know, as Kevin Roos mentioned, he looked like a man who was really relieved, unburdened. Whistleblower? What whistleblower? Cascading years-long trust crisis that has regulators fuming, employees bailing, lawmakers comparing Facebook to big tobacco. Doesn't ring a bell. I don't know what you're talking about. But Mark Zuckerberg and his lieutenants, they were cheerfully laying out their vision for the so-called metaverse. And I'm going to be explaining more about this in just a second. But essentially, it's an immersive virtual reality. It's an immersive virtual environment that Facebook wants everybody to be a part of. And they're trying to build it. And Facebook, again, as a whole, the company has been renamed Meta. It's very similar to what happened back in 2015 when Google, you might remember this, they rebranded themselves as Alphabet in 2015. That's the name of the actual company. And then Google, sort of Alphabet's kind of the umbrella. And then underneath Alphabet is all the stuff that Google used to own when it was called Google, such as Google. So Alphabet's up top. That's the sort of, you know, the umbrella. Underneath is Google, YouTube, all the stuff that they have, Android, whatever. And so, you know, that might not be a bad idea from a management point of view to rebrand, especially given the toxic sort of discussion around Facebook these days, to have this sort of parent company. You know, stockbrokers might think this is actually not a bad idea for the company going forward. But what is this really all about? Well, this rebranding is really something that's been in the works for years. They have more than 10,000 people. The New York Times is reporting that they have more than 10,000 people right now working on augmented reality and virtual reality projects in what they call their Reality Labs division. Now, just for some perspective here, Twitter only has 5,000 employees total. And these guys have, Facebook has 10,000 people working on virtual reality as we speak. And they want to hire 10,000 more people to work for them in Europe on the same stuff. They're going to be spending $10 billion on investing in the metaverse. And they've been acquiring companies like crazy. Like your kids are going to be acquiring Snickers bars, you know, in a couple days on Halloween. They've been acquiring virtual reality startup companies in kind of a metaverse land grab, as the New York Times puts it. They want to kind of corner the market on this. Well, what is the metaverse? What is it? Well, he talked about this in his presentation on Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg. He called it sort of a clean, well-lit virtual world. And it's a lot like video games when, and I'm not a gamer, but maybe you are, maybe your kids are. Gaming is absolutely huge. I'd rather, I used to play a little bit of video games back in the day. NHL 94 was a favorite. sports games like the early versions of Madden. But now it's become this huge industry. Now there are obviously professional gamers out there that make their living playing video games and tournaments and stuff like that. And so all kinds of Overwatch leagues are out there, you know, all this sort of stuff. And sometimes in these games, people create their own avatar and they can sort of pay money to have their avatar wear certain clothes, blah, 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 sort of in-app purchases, as it were, in-game purchases. There's that. But it's going to be more than that. He's going to be talking about people wearing body sensors so you can kind of get in the virtual world, go to virtual concerts, go shopping for virtual goods, collect virtual art pieces, hang out with people virtually, not like on Zoom. Zuck says this is going to be better. Let me just play a little clip from his presentation on Thursday. Check this out.
The feeling of presence. This is the defining quality of the metaverse. You're going to really feel like you're there with other people. You'll see their facial expressions, you'll see their body language, maybe figure out if they're actually holding a winning hand. All the subtle ways that we communicate that today's technology can't quite deliver. Next, there are avatars, and that's how we're going to represent ourselves in the metaverse. Avatars will be as common as profile pictures today, but instead of a static image, they're going to be living 3D representations of you, your expressions, your gestures, that are going to make interactions much richer than anything that's possible online today. You'll probably have a photorealistic avatar for work, a stylized one for hanging out, and maybe even a fantasy one for gaming.
This does not sound appealing to me. I don't know about you, but it's interesting that he used the word presence. You use the word presence. We're going to be talking about the metaverse and how it relates to the church in just a minute. But basically, Zuckerberg is betting that the metaverse is going to be, as he calls it, a successor to the mobile internet. Okay, we're in the internet age right now. He thinks the metaverse is the next step. So imagine a guy like just sitting at home on his couch. Well, I'm going to use my work avatar and kind of virtually show up at work. I'm wearing my virtual Armani suit. But then later on, I'm going to be meeting some of my friends at the pub, so I'm going to use my casual avatar. You know, wearing Bonobus or something. You know, I don't know. Does this sound appealing to you? I don't know. 1-888-914-9149, it's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Is this going to work? Is this going to work? Well, Kevin Roos, writing for the New York Times, says that he's really skeptical about it because if you look at Facebook, what they've done recently, they've really done nothing original in the past few years, in the past 10 years. They basically just bought a bunch of apps. Like, they bought WhatsApp, and it's become much worse since they bought it. They bought Instagram, and a lot of people, I'm not an Instagram user, but a lot of people used to think that Instagram was the best social media experience going before they bought it. Now it's become littered with ads, very Facebook-ish. Which is not a great experience in and of itself. I know a lot of you guys out there are Facebook users, but I understand what you're giving up to use the service. You are the product. You're giving them your information, all kinds of info about you for free. You're not getting paid for this, but they're selling it to advertisers who are targeting you. We'll have to do another show about how they're actually doing this. And I'll tell you how this actually works someday, because maybe we'll do that next week if you're interested, because you might be wondering if you're at somebody's house. And let's say you're visiting somebody, and then you all of a sudden get an ad on your phone for the kind of toothpaste that your friend has in his bathroom or her bathroom or whatever you're staying. I don't use that. Why am I getting an ad for this? Well, it has to do with privacy and what's going on there. And that's why Facebook is really upset right now with Apple, because Apple's privacy settings have really hindered what they can do with your data. So if you are using an iPhone or an iPad, if you're using iOS, please go into your privacy settings and block them out from tracking you all over the place. It's for your own good. Trust me. Thank me later. So why is he doing this? Like, he's basically been, Zuckerberg's been buying all these companies, copying their features, rather than developing his own stuff. So this metaverse stuff is something different than the way they've been kind of operating from the day to day in the last few years. Well, as Kevin Roos in The Times writes, basically there's a few problems that they're trying to deal with before we get into how it relates to the church. People who use Facebook, that demographic is getting pretty old. Younger people are not really using Facebook too much. They're on TikTok, Snapchat, hipper, cooler, younger apps, as it were. And their ad revenue is starting to drop because their clientele is getting older. Even Instagram, young people are avoiding it like the plague now. It's losing the attention of teens and 20-somethings. So what they are hoping for is something different with this metaverse. The other thing, too, is that he wants to get out from under the regulators. Obviously, they're in trouble with whistleblowers like Frances Haugen, who left the company in May. She's revealed under oath she was responsible for leaking internal documents that talked about all the you know, shady stuff that Facebook is doing. The Facebook papers, you've probably heard about those. And so the world of virtual reality and augmented reality really doesn't, it's not regulated right now. So he wants to get away from companies like Apple. As long as you're using your phone, if it's an Apple phone, Apple can shut down what Facebook can do. But in the virtual world, he can do whatever he wants right now. So that's part of it. And that's a strategic benefit to him. So anyways, he wants to get out from under Apple's thumb, Google's thumb. He wants to snoop on people. And I don't know, maybe he thinks it's going to somehow make the world better, but I have a huge, huge skepticism about this. Anyway, so I think it's partially why they're renaming the company. It's their Facebook name has become toxic, but also it's what they want to do next with this metaverse. So what does this have to do with the church? You might remember, not too long ago, you might remember that we did some shows on the Church of Instagram, and we'll put some links to these in the show notes. The Church of Instagram, and also we talked about how Facebook is actively trying to use money. They're paying Christian organizations, Protestant congregations, mega churches, even some Catholic groups. They're paying them to go on Facebook and have a huge presence there. And I think this is where this metaverse kind of comes in. I think they want to create a bit of an alternate church reality. And this has huge implications for us as Catholics. So you're going to want to hear about this. We're going to be talking about this right after the break. Is there going to be a Catholic metachurch on the metaverse? And is it going to be in opposition to Rome? What does Zuckerberg have up his sleeve? And how can we react to this? You're listening to The Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back. Today, we'd like to thank Carlos, who's listening in Minnesota, for donating his Honda. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car.
This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show for our final segment, 888-914-9149. You know, I was doing some research into the metaverse, that Meta, which was the artist formerly known as Facebook, is now creating, Mark Zuckerberg. I came across an article that was actually from this August, way, way before Zuckerberg announced this, just a couple days ago. It was in the National Catholic Reporter, written by Phyllis Zagano. And the reporter definitely, I would say, leans way too much towards the liberal side of things, left-leaning. But it was remarkably prescient in what it was predicting. And Phyllis Zagano wrote about the metaverse, about a possible Catholic metaverse. And again, a metaverse is kind of a virtual world like those that exist in virtual reality games that people play, like Minecraft, Fortnite. Roblox is another popular platform where you can have an avatar and have sort of a three-dimensional icon of yourself. And how does this play into the Catholic future? Well, it could play into how people worship. And again, Facebook has invested heavily in trying to get people of faith, of all kinds of different faiths, onto their platform and make that the virtual, especially during the pandemic. Hey, you can't go to church. You can't go to your normal place of worship. Why not meet up on Facebook? And so obviously I don't think they really care about the religious aspects of it. They're just trying to make cash. But when it comes to Catholics, how should we think about this? Well, Phyllis Sagano says the word parish could take on a new meaning because in pre-pandemic times, folks could choose parishes according to their likes and dislikes. And that's kind of, in a sense, one of the good things about being Catholic is that it's like a franchise in a certain sense. If you don't like your parish for whatever reason, there is always another Catholic parish down the road. If your priest is a raging heretic or whatever, or you know, you don't like the stained glass windows, you can always go somewhere else. And you're still in the Catholic Church. Now some people might say, no, you should always be in your local parish no matter what, and you should just suffer through it and try to light a candle in the darkness. Well, do you have time for that? I don't know. Do you have time to wait 12 years for the pastor to be transferred? I don't know. I personally wouldn't, but chacun son goût, to each your own. And anyways, Phyllis Sagano says in pre-pandemic times, folks would choose their parishes according to their likes and dislikes, the community, the location, the pastor, the liturgies, pretty much in that order. Now it's easier to shop around. Community has nothing to do with it. Location only presents temporal considerations. Oh, what time zone is the parish in? I could actually hop on online at a different time. It's morning there, but it's afternoon here. I'd rather go to Mass in the afternoon virtually so I can sleep in. Do you want to go Tridentine or Novus Ordo? What would you like? So it's a bit of a smorgasbord. And she talks about the Catholic metaverse being created through social media in which you can participate anonymously. And that's a huge part of the problem with this idea, that it is anonymous. It's not personal. It's not personal. And so she kind of, she doesn't really say whether she likes this idea, but I get the sense that she might be happy about the idea of a virtual parish not under the control of Rome. She says each virtual community could have a different aim and ethos. Each could have a different outlook on church teaching and church discipline. None is controlled by Rome. That's not a good thing in my books. So, and she talks about Zuckerberg and how Zuckerberg wanted to create a metaverse. So she was onto this months ago, this idea of an embodied internet. Well, it's not really embodied. It's virtual. It's an avatar. It's not really you. So Zuckerberg keeps talking about with this idea of the metaverse presence, and he calls it a more natural way of interacting. It's not. I mean, it's better than Zoom, I guess. But is it really more natural? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. The key is here, when it comes to presence, when it comes to the church, you have to be present physically for the sacraments to happen. You absolutely have to do this. That's the big question here. If the church goes meta, what happens to the sacraments? And you need them. You can't get around this. This is where a physical church in physical reality, actual reality, not virtual reality, is an absolute necessity. And talked about the pillar earlier. The pillar was kind of founded by canon lawyer Ed Condon and the Catholic journalist J.D. Flynn. They founded the pillar a few months ago. And when the pandemic started, they were working for the Catholic News Agency, both of them, and they talked a lot about this. And they wrote a lot about whether or not it's actually possible for people to have virtual sacraments. And the answer is basically no. Because a lot of people are wondering, oh, can I have confession virtually through the internet, through chat, or through even a phone call? And the sacrament of confession was a really, really big one. Obviously, the Eucharist, you kind of have to be present for that. But the sacrament of confession, can I do my sacrament virtually? No, you really can't. You really can't. You've got to have a number of conditions met for that sacrament to take place. You've got to actually let your sins be known to a priest who's acting in the person of Christ. You've got to express true contrition, resolve to sin no more. And then, of course, the absolution happens. And there's the sacramental formula of the church. So the church requires that for a valid confession, all of those things have to happen in one place. But the pandemic was making people question whether or not that was really, really true. And some priests were even coming out and saying, I think I could do a confession over the phone. It's not really me there. But that creates a whole list of other questions about security, who might be listening, all that sort of stuff. But the church has pretty much come down on saying, no, that's not possible at all. J.D. Flynn and Ed Condon interviewed Father James Bradley, who is an assistant professor of canon law at the CUA, the Catholic University of America. And he said that the canon law on this is really, really clear, that the faithful do have a right to the sacraments even during a pandemic, and the church's ministers should do all that they can to provide them. Online resources are great, but they don't cover the actual reality of the sacraments, their very, very nature. And Father Bradley said that digital communications, quote, can and do assist people in deepening their faith, especially through catechesis and formation. And I don't disagree with that at all. In fact, that's really what we're doing through Relevant Radio. We're trying to catechize people. We're trying to form people. We're talking about the faith, helping them learn it. Programs like The Faith Explained, all of our other programs, this show, Drew's show, Patrick's show, Timmy's show, that's what we do. We're trying to educate and inspire people in their faith. And the internet can be a wonderful tool for evangelization. So I do think that some of these metaverse communities, and even the ones that Facebook has now, could be helpful in that sense, for sure, for sure. But the sacraments themselves have a certain nature that is physical. And here's what, speaking of social communications, the internet, all that stuff, the Pontifical Council for Social Communications recently put out a statement, and they put it pretty bluntly. They said, quote, virtual reality is no substitute for the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. That's the one you obviously can't get online. The sacramental reality of the other sacraments, again, you can't get those online either, and shared worship in a flesh and blood human community. There are no, this is a line from the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. This is pretty blunt. They said there are no sacraments on the internet. And even the religious experiences possible there by the grace of God are insufficient apart from real world interaction with other persons of faith, end of quote. So yeah, you can use virtual tools to find some sort of community, help each other grow in the faith, learn the faith, study the faith, be edified somewhat, but it's insufficient because you also need real world interaction with real people. That's how you practice the virtues. You can't practice the virtues virtually. You've got to practice them with real people, learn humility with real people, serve real people. Yeah, I can serve people in some ways online, but of course, the physical nature of the sacraments requires physical presence. So that's absolutely huge. And in a sense, this is really what all the sacraments are about. All the sacraments involve a physical dimension. In marriage, it's the matter of the sacrament are the bodies of the spouses. And the sacrament actually is renewed every time that a couple, you know, I don't have to say it. And so, hey, renew the sacrament. Yeah, do it. The other sacraments, you can't baptize a person who's not there. You can't baptize somebody virtually. You can't participate in the sacrifice of the Mass. A priest actually has to be physically present to confect the Eucharist. And the church itself is incarnational, just like the sacraments. The church is an extension, in a way, of the incarnation of Christ through time via the church. The mystical body of Christ is always on the earth in the church. So that's huge. And this can never, ever be replicated in any kind of a meta-church in the metaverse. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. Frank is calling from Philadelphia. Hi, Frank.
Maple Leaf Kill, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Yeah, earlier you mentioned purgatory. I just have a question. For people who have medical problems and they're suffering and linger, like whether it's 3 months or 3 years, do they get, like, say, an easy pass right to heaven, or do they go to purgatory still?
Well, I think it would depend, right? But you can certainly offer your suffering on earth for that purpose, and you know, wasted suffering is never a good idea. That's truly meaningless suffering if suffering is wasted. But obviously, a lot of people can use the expiation, the temporal punishment due to sin. Obviously, the eternal punishment, separation from God from all eternity. That's what gets forgiven in the confessional in the case of mortal sin. But then there's also penance given, right? And
what do you mean, used or suffering?
Well, you've heard that phrase, how people often say, offer it up, offer it up. If you're, you know, if you've got a toothache or you're going through a tough time, you can offer up your suffering. And one of the things that you can do is offer it up for the temporal punishment that's due to us. And this is really what happens in purgatory, that this is where we become purified by, we need to, purgatory is really a place where we need to let go of things, let go of the selfishness. It's like the mud room of heaven, where we kind of wipe off all the mud of selfishness and sin, that the attachments to sin that we have before we can enter into the reality of heaven. And so without holiness, as I talked about earlier, there's that verse in Hebrews, without holiness, no one will see the Lord. So are we, some people do achieve this in their life, and they can, in a sense, it is possible for them to go straight to heaven without having to taste purgatory. But a lot of people who are suffering, they offer their sufferings for other people and themselves. And so they can help others. They can offer sufferings for the holy souls in purgatory. They can offer sufferings for people who are still on earth. And this is part of the mystical union of us as cells in the body of Christ, the church on earth, that we can actually help one another. We're united in Christ. And it sounds strange to non-Catholics, for sure, but it's real. It's very real. So in answer to your question, Frank, it is possible. It is possible.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't know if I cleared that up or whether it's clear as
a little bit. No, you did it about the suffering part. I understand that.
Okay, good.
I appreciate it.
All right, well, you got it, Frank. Well, thanks for calling in. God bless you. Frank calling from Philadelphia. All right, well, listen, producer Lucas Holt has been working really, really hard putting together the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. So without further ado, let's go to it. The week that was. We are getting ready to crack open another fresh show for you. And I also have a extensive selection of treat-sized Halloween candy on my desk.
Wow, Smarties. You're already dipping into the candy for Halloween.
For okay. The kids, ostensibly for the kids, but...
Right, sure.
Let's be honest. And I just want to let that song play. I tweeted something from the @KaleClark account that was kind of mysterious. A picture of Timothy Chalamet holding a dagger. You can obviously tell that some of the vestiges of the rejected faith of the creator of Dune, Frank Herbert, did make it into the film. Here's the big line here. Hence, they could not be saved, who, knowing that the Catholic Church was founded as necessary by God through Christ, would either refuse to enter it or to remain in it. End of quote. And that's a quote there from Lumen Gentium, chapter 14. And this is what I heard during this talk that Patrick Madrid was given. He brought this up, and it really cut me to the heart. I said, wow, this has to do with my salvation. These are just not nice things that I'm learning about the Catholic Church. Wow, this is part of the package. To reject the church is to reject Christ. Jude obviously has become a really, really popular saint through the ages. How does he become eventually the patron saint of hopeless cases? So as the story goes, after Jesus ascended into heaven, Jude went to evangelize, he as an apostle, as a missionary, in that region of Edessa. And he visits this guy, Abgar. He lays his hands upon this guy, who's still in really bad shape, and he is healed instantly, and he was considered a hopeless case. Pope Benedict wrote a lot about conscience. The most important thing that he says in all of this stuff is the freedom to follow your conscience as God leads it. Regardless of what other people around you are doing, regardless of what society is trying to pressure you to do that's against your conscience, he said true freedom is not the freedom to do whatever you want, but it's the freedom to abandon sin. It's the freedom to pursue the truth and embrace that and commit ourselves to Christ, who is the truth personally. Oh, great job, Lucas. The week that was. It's always a fun week with you on the Cale Clark Show. And Lucas actually shared with me something about the spookiness of Catholicism as you're getting ready for All Hallows Eve this weekend. This guy on Twitter by the name of Dean Detloff posted this. somebody named, there was a writer named Asada Shakur, and I had to look her up. Apparently, she's a fugitive from the law. She's wanted by the FBI. That's a whole other story for another day. Wow. But anyway, so she converted to Catholicism, later left the church. But here's what she said when she came into the Catholic Church. This is a wild comment about how spooky Catholicism is. And we should kind of embrace that. She wrote, "The Catholic Church was different. It was silent and cold. The music was terrible. You couldn't understand 9/10 of the service. But what fascinated me was the spookiness of it. They had so much weird stuff attached to their religion. When you walked in the door, you had to cross yourself with holy water. Then you had to genuflect. Then you're up and down, sitting, standing, kneeling. And there was so much stuff to learn. Stations of the cross, rosary beads, lighting candles, going to confession. It was all so spooky. I just knew this had to be the real God." Wow. So embrace the spookiness, my friends, and a happy All Hallows Eve to you. I'm Cale Clark, Lucas Holt produced. Mariano took your calls today. Have a great weekend, everybody. Timmy's up next. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.